Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God is black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd, and I'm here with my co-host tonight, Dr. J. Edward Weed III, and Dr. Kate is also with us tonight. Our guest, Rob Harris, is going to start the show, is here and ready to go. But before we get to the Morse recall, we'd like to open the show, as always, with a prayer. Ed, would you do the honors, please?
I'm honored to do so. Thank you very much. Our Almighty Father, Yahweh God, we come humbly unto you, and we ask you, who has given us our land, our heritage, we humbly beg you to hear our prayer tonight. We recognize you are the God that hears and answers prayer, and we pray that you will bless us in our efforts to preserve our nation, to preserve freedom. We ask that you will defend our liberties with us, and that you will fashion a united people together, Father, that you will bless us to come together as one, that we can come together in truth, that we can come together in faith, that we can come together under our one God, our one true and living God, in one faith and one baptism, that we might be able to defend our homes and defend our land from tyranny, and that we might bring glory and honor to you through the process, and that you would get the credit and glory and honor for everything that we do, that you would be the one who is uplifted throughout it all, and that we would not accept personal glory, but we would point a finger to you and what you've done for us and through us. We know all good things come about because of you, and we know that all things are not good, Yahweh God, but we know that all things work together for the good to those who love you and are called according to your purpose. And we pray, Father, tonight you'll be with our show, you'll bless us, and we thank you for the guests we're having, that you'll bless this freedom movement that we're having in our country, and that you'll be with it every step of the way, and that it would be pleasing unto you. And we ask these things in your name, Yahweh, our Father, in the name of our kinsman redeemer, Yahshua the Christ. So be it.
So be it. Well, Rob Harris, boy, it's good to talk to you, and it was good to hear your voice when we talked a little bit earlier, and I understand you've been traveling a little bit tired tonight, so we really appreciate you hanging in there and coming on the show tonight and giving us an update on the John Morse recall. Some of our listeners are outside the state of Colorado and don't have a clue what we're talking about, so you might want to keep it basic for just a second and kind of give a description of that recall and what it's about and how you got in it, and just give us a little background real quick.
I can do that. My name's Rob Harris, and I initiated the recall here in Colorado Springs. I am on the recall committee, and I led the effort here in Colorado Springs with the help of lots and lots and lots of folks around the state and in the city of Colorado Springs to make this happen. We had lots of folks providing logistical support, doing some fundraising stuff. We had attorneys helping us with stuff. We had some folks doing some treasury stuff. We had other folks out there putting their face in front of the media, like Laura Carno. We now have Jennifer Kern out there doing that for us, and it takes a team effort. We had close to 150 volunteers collecting signatures. We also, based upon the fundraising, had paid petitioners out there collecting signatures as well. So basically what we did is back in late February, early March, I was sitting on my couch, and like I'm prone to do, and I was seeing what was going on in D.C. and here in Colorado, and I was just a bit upset. And so I was writing letters to my senators and representatives in the state of Colorado, and they weren't really paying attention. And I said, I'm going to see who I can find out there that's willing to join with me and help recall my senator. And I knew that my senator was Senator Morse, and I knew that he was president of the Senate. To send a message to both Denver and D.C. that we the people need to be listened to. Now, you have to keep in mind that during this time, the whole gun control and the Sandy Hook had happened in the recent past, and everybody was talking about what they were going to be doing. So this was in the news. And then that month in March, Morse came on. He went on the Rachel Maddow show, and he basically stated, I'm not going to read my constituents' emails. They're vitriol, and I'm telling my fellow senators not to do the same. Well, that just motivated us more. So I reached out to various and sundry groups. I found some folks, Basic Freedom Defense Fund. I hooked up with them. And they are providing superb logistical support. But people need to realize the difference between me and them is they got a 30-day head start on me. They're just a bunch of guys just like I am who are upset with what's going on. They've not been politically active before now, just like me. So we were just guys sitting around wanting to live our lives, and representatives in government had different opinions. And so in order to protect our freedom, we were willing to stand up and do something.
Well, so, there's been a lot of accusations. There's been a lot of accusations thrown around, which I think we should just clearly dispel right up front, like one that somebody approached you and from outside the state, or, you know, that political figures approached you to do this, that you were influenced by outside people to do this. You were also supported by the NRA. You know, let's start there.
Well, I can start there. As I stated, this all started from a telephone conversation I had with my mother. And I was discussing the issues in D.C., and I said, you know, I should just run for U.S. Senate. And she goes, yeah, well, because I was looking in the paper, I saw that Udall didn't have an opponent at the time. And she goes, yeah, he's got $4 million in the bank, and he's got a political machine. And I said, yeah, I'm just frustrated. I'm ranting. She goes, but you know what you can do? Is you can become politically active. And I said, yeah, right, whatever. But they got me to thinking, what can I do as a citizen? And that's when I started doing the research. As a citizen, what can I do? And I got online, and over the next 3 days, I made the decision that I'm going to do this. And that's when I started sending out emails to all sorts of different groups, all sorts of different people that might come on board. And like I stated, the Basic Freedom Defense Fund guys were the ones that I was able to find that they had just basically started up a 501c4, and they had the same idea I did 30 days ahead of me. Now, our relationship with the NRA is that when they saw that we had a ground game going on, we were communicating with them, talking to them. They did an article in America's First Freedom about the recalls because it was such a hot topic in Colorado and around the nation with gun control. And then they also did a flyer for us midway to two-thirds of the way through the campaign. that's the extent of the NRA's involvement in what we've done. They've not run this campaign. They've not, you know, contributed $20,000 to the campaign. They've not done those things. Would love for them to. Perhaps they will. But at this point, they're so busy. I mean, people need to understand that while all this was going on, stuff in D.C. was going on too. And NRA was very busy in D.C. So they can only do what they can do, and they're very effective at doing that. And there's other groups here in Colorado that need to step up and do what they need to do to be successful. And so that's where we're at. So we're just some folks that are homegrown. I had nobody approach me from out of state or from anywhere else. This was my idea for me to step up. Now, obviously, there were others in the state with BFDF that had a similar idea, but they didn't live in Senate District 11. They're in other parts of the state, so they've provided logistical support. Me and a couple of other guys that live in Senate District 11 are the ones that have done what needs to be done in terms of the putting the petition in and leading the effort here. It has been a lot of Coloradans stepping out as volunteers on weekends and going door to door during the week and spending their spare time to be successful, because that's what it takes. And it's a lot of people within BFDF going around and talking to folks and working on fundraising to get some Colorado money to come in, and talking to people like Laura Carno to get her fundraising going, to get that money coming in. So it takes a lot of different parts to make that work together. But nobody approached me whatsoever. I approached others.
Well, now, we know, you know, I was one of the people that went down and testified during the Senate hearing committee meetings, the committee hearings, and it was on the street at that point that one of Bloomberg's PR guys was actually present at the Capitol in Colorado. This is a you can tell the people who Bloomberg is. I won't get into that, but the point is that the word down at the Capitol amongst the politicals was that Bloomberg had threatened every Democrat senator in the state Senate of Colorado. And he told them that if they voted against the anti-gun bills, that he would personally fund their primary opposition in their next election.
He would do them what he is doing to the Democrat in Arkansas, Mark Pryor. So he was good to his word. And Mark Pryor actually had integrity and stood up against a bully from another state and stood up for the rights for the people in his state. And he represented the people in his state, which brings me to the point of this is a nonpartisan issue. And I'm pretty sure I have the name right. It's Mark Pryor. That's the Democrat in Arkansas. He's a Democrat, but he has integrity, and he stood up to represent his constituents. The Democrats in Colorado did not have integrity and stand up to represent their constituents. So it really is that simple. Morris did not represent the people of his district. Perrone did not represent the people of her district. They were afraid of Bloomberg, and they followed through doing his bidding.
It seemed to me, because I had John Moore sitting right next to me when I was testifying down there, it seemed to me that that he had no problem whatsoever ignoring his constituents, listening to the outside influence, and accepting whatever support he could get to push his Marxist agenda. And I, you know, as a past so-called police officer type person, because he actually, as I recall, was he not a chief of police in Fountain, which is right outside of Colorado Springs, and actually quit there twice? Or
for less than a year, they yeah, he didn't last long there. But yes, for less than a year, he was a police chief in Fountain.
But he could care less about whether or not you know, his gun bills are going to cut crime. You got to just understand that this guy is all about pushing the leftist agenda and you know, being a globalist and Marxist. I don't care what party he's in. I mean,
It truly is about control. And here is the statement that we have made from the get-go of, and we continue to make it. Morse has come out since we've been successful. I had to do something. Well, you know, if you have a grease fire on your stove, doing something, throwing water on that, it's doing something. That doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. It can make matters worse. And taking guns out of the hand and limiting the ability of law-abiding citizens to protect themselves is not the right thing to do. Now, we can have a debate on a separate day of what is the right thing to do. I personally believe that gun-free zones are one of the biggest problems we have in this nation. But that, like I said, that's a debate that we should have. We never had the debate. It was, okay, we're going to have a debate, and then the Democrats filed their fingernails, read magazines, and allowed 90 minutes of so-called testimony, which was extremely limited, and limiting the voice of hundreds of Colorado citizens and not allowing their input on legislation, which is just truly amazing.
Well, they don't want to debate. They don't want to debate gun-free zones on the basis that if anybody with any intelligence and research has been done, gun-free zones are one of the high crime areas in the country. Some of the places gun-free zones, they don't want anybody to bring statistics to the table. You can't debate facts. So that's what they're trying to avoid.
Every mass murder but one has been in the last couple, three decades has been done in a gun-free zone. Fort Hood, Virginia Tech, Sandy Hook, Aurora, Columbine, all of those, gun-free zones.
They must not have read the signs.
Let's visit a little bit about the Bloomberg influence, and particularly the false accusations that were leveled, the robocalls, the radio spots, and who these false accusations were leveled against.
Well, the robocalls came out, and they basically were stating that people might be coming to your door, and they could be criminals and sexual offenders and identity thieves. And they were leveled against people that were not. Later on in the campaign, Morse's folks tried to say, well, we weren't talking about the volunteers, but there was absolutely no distinction in their robocalls and in their ads. They were blanketing out that anybody coming to your door could be a sexual predator, sexual offender, identity thief, and they blanketed that out about us. What impact that had, and this just goes to show you that they've not been dealing with Coloradans. They've been dealing with Chicago and D.C. politics and politicians, because their game plan has come out of D.C. and Chicago. That's why their tactics did not work here in Colorado. They don't understand Coloradans. So they put those robocalls out there, and they put the ads out there, and our signature rate doubled.
Well, they don't understand Alabamians either, I can tell you that.
No, they don't. So their ad helped us. Even though they were calling us names, they were calling us criminals, that so incensed people that they came looking for us at the stores. They came looking for us on the corners. And literally, we had people that told us, I've been looking for you for days. And what people have to understand is that the majority of our volunteers work during the day. We had some folks that were retirees, but the majority of us have a full-time job. I have a full-time job already. I work 40 hours a week doing something else. So I was doing this. I was working 50 hours a week on this in my spare time, nights and weekends. And that was the case for a good portion of the other volunteers that were doing stuff.
Well, Rob, give the folks a little idea of what's involved in the recall, the mechanics of it. How do they determine how many signatures you got to have? How many signatures did you have to have? How do they calculate that? Where do those signatures have to come from? Can you give the folks a
okay.
little bit of
yep.
that? Because
sure
somebody else out there might want to do a recall, you know?
Absolutely. So the way the recall works here in Colorado, and you can go out and Bing or Google recall, and there's, I think it's a Ballotpedia or something like that, has a whole bunch of information on recall, and it has links to all the states that allow recalls. I think there's 34 states, if I'm not mistaken. It could be 29, but there's states that allow recall, states that don't. Colorado is one. And the way they determine the number is it's 25% of the number of votes in the last election for that seat is how many signatures you have to obtain. So for this particular recall for Morse, we looked at the number of votes that were held for this election in 2010 for this seat in Senate District 11. And 25% of that number was 7,178. So what we had to do is get 7,178 valid signatures. What's a valid signature? That is a registered voter living in Senate District 11, Colorado Senate District 11. So that was what we had to go out and do. And that's what we attempted to do. What we found is a lot of folks, yeah, I live in District 11, but people that don't live here in Colorado Springs don't understand. We have a school District 11 and a Senate District 11 that partially overlap. A lot of people think they're in Senate District 11 and they're in school District 11. We learned early on, after about the first two or three weeks, that people were saying they were in District 11 and they really weren't. So we got some false signatures up front that they were just false positives. We learned there was no point in getting those. We got maps to our folks. We tried to make sure those people that had smartphones, we had them check against the Secretary of State database. That's the difference between what we did and what the Heron folks did, is they did that from the very beginning, checking against the Secretary of State database. We didn't have enough people with smartphones to do that. So we went to just having folks look at maps and going on the honor system of somebody coming up. So anybody can come up and say, I live in Senate District 11, but they can be any Tom, Dick, or Harry. And they say they live there. Okay. Here's the petition. Please read the petition. Once they've read it, they're welcome to sign it. So we ended up getting 16,000 signatures. Of those 16,000, a little over 10,000, just a little over 10,000 are valid. to give you an idea of what made some of those other signatures invalid, you had things that were human error mistakes. In other words, the notary and the circulator date are different. In other words, the petitioner, they go and they stand in front of a notary stating, I witnessed these 20 signatures or 18 or however many they had on the petition, and I'm stating that those are all valid. Well, if the date that they put on there is not the same date as the notary, that disqualifies those names. So that's a human error mistake. You can have illegible signatures. You can have incorrect information on that same circulator affidavit. You can have people that they registered after they signed. You had information that was incorrect. I'm not quite sure what that means. Maybe the street didn't exist, or I'm not really sure what that means. There were about 1,100 duplicate signatures, and there were over 1,000 names that were not found, and a couple of thousand of the signers were not in the district. That was sent to me by somebody that said, hey, here's a breakdown that we got of where things went wrong. So some of those could probably be contested if necessary. I don't think they'll be necessary because we almost have half again as many as we need anyway. Having over 10,000, we only need about just over 7. Right now, Morse, for those who don't know, Morse is contesting, or he has somebody that lives within the district, that his attorneys are contesting based upon a technicality of some thing within the Constitution stating that we did not claim that we had to have an election and somebody would replace Morse, which makes no sense whatsoever because the wording was given to us by the Secretary of State. Section 2 of Article 21 and the Constitution pretty much outlines what the wording is supposed to be. I think that's the correct section. And, you know, that's, I'm not an attorney. This is all attorney legal area for attorneys. But that was put together by a Democrat Secretary of State. That wording was actually put together, and the form was put together prior to the current Secretary of State even being in office. And so he just gave us that form, and that's what we followed. And then that was approved. But that's all. That'll be taken care of in courts and with attorneys and judges. And bottom line is over 10,000 citizens in Senate District 11 would like to see a recall election for Senator Morse. That's a pretty straightforward thing. When we went out and talked to folks, we didn't go out and try to hide anything. We always asked them to read the petition, and folks are pretty smart. They realize, hey, would you like to sign the petition to recall Senator Morse? This is what he's done. When you recall somebody, a lot of people would say, who are you going to replace him with? And we would say, we're not allowed to endorse anybody. We're nonpartisan. We can only ask for the recall election. It's up to the political parties to provide somebody else. So that's our response. And we would give that to a lot of people out there. So that's...
Well, as a volunteer circulator, which I was, I drove down from Denver. I couldn't sign the petition, but people from outside the district could certainly work the recall and volunteer to do whatever and donate. How far away did you have some people coming? Because I know some coming came from twice the distance I did.
The first way we had some folks come from Grand Junction, and
they
came in. There was a couple that they went to every – they spent 4 weekends going to the recalls. And for folks that don't know, that don't live in Colorado, we had 4 recalls going on. Two of them have reached the number of signatures. Two did not. And of the two that have reached the number of signatures, one of those has been validated by the Secretary of State, and that's the Recall Morse campaign. The Recall Her Own campaign down in Pueblo, they're still validating those. And so we're waiting to see what the Secretary of State says about that. But this couple, they drove from Grand Junction to Durango, to Denver, to Colorado Springs, and to Pueblo on 4 different weekends. We had another guy come down from Bailey, which is outside of Denver, but it's and for folks outside of Colorado, once again, this is out sort of in the boonies, so you have to go up to the city and then drive down. So you have to drive up and over to get to Colorado Springs. So it's a couple hours of drive to do anything. We had somebody come down from Fort Collins. We had folks come up from Pueblo early before the hurricane.
Grand Junction's what, about a 4 hour drive?
Ooh, I'd say it's 5 or 6, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
I think I can be there in about 3 hours and 45 minutes, but then, you know, I fudge that speed limit a little bit. I told people I don't put a fish on my car because I don't want Jesus being accused or blamed for my driving.
So the other thing that people need to realize is that only Colorado citizens are allowed to collect signatures. So we had a couple of folks that were transplants here that they hadn't transferred their license over, or some other type of issue like that, that they were not allowed to collect signatures. So you have to be a Colorado citizen in order to collect signatures.
Well, I'm confident that I could have collected 5 times the number of signatures that I collected. I worked about 3 different events. I worked a couple of gun shows, and I worked at Constitutional Sheriff's meeting that they had regarding the lawsuit against that the 55 sheriffs have filed. I could have collected 5 times the number of signatures if I didn't have to get signatures from within that district. And I was working inside that district. So, I mean, if you collected 16,000 signatures, I'm saying we could have probably collected 80,000 signatures had we been able to just have anybody from Colorado sign.
Oh, absolutely. We were turning away 3/4 of the people, 2/3 to 3/4 of the people, easily. We were turning them away. That just how many we had to turn away because they didn't live in the district. And that was standing on street corners. People would drive by. They would stop to sign. Where do you live? Let's look at the map. Oh, I live in District 11. Yeah, let's look at the map. And that, I mean, that's really, we really did try to do our due diligence on keeping folks only that lived in the district signing, but can only
well,
do
the thing
so
that
much.
Impressed me, the thing that impressed me, and I heard this story from a number of your volunteers, where people would come up and say, I voted for that guy. I didn't know any better. I want to correct my mistake.
Yep. We had a lot of Democrats do that. And that is, well, I think that's probably why Morse is fighting so hard. That's why he was fighting so hard early on to try to get people not to sign the petition. That's why he's fighting now in the courts. He's doing anything and everything he can to not face his constituents. So from the very beginning, before the recall even began, he has not wanted to listen to his constituents, and he's publicly stated that. and his actions have proved it, both by what he did in the Senate and by what he is doing now. His actions continue to prove I do not want to face the constituents of Senate District 11.
So in other words, he's a dictator who doesn't want to abide by the will of the people. He doesn't believe that the government should be done by the consent of those who are governed.
That is correct.
He first demonstrated that by changing the Senate rules.
Yes.
Unconstitutionally, and I mean state constitution, unstate constitutionally, he changed those rules, and he did not follow proper procedure to change those rules. And on one of the bills that they introduced, the rules ended up with none of the public comment being allowed, and there were people lined up outside the room, out all the way around a big open area in the state capitol building. People were lined up by the hundreds wanting to get in and testify, and on one of the bills, they did not allow a single public comment.
Yeah, it is truly amazing. I'm gonna give a plug real quick to a couple of our social media sites. We are on Facebook for folks that do Facebook. We're out at Recall Senator John Morse. We ask that you go out, like our page, tell your friends about it. You can follow what we're doing out there. At the top of our page, I'd just like to give your listeners the quote that we have up there, and it is as follows. The power under the Constitution will always be in the people. It is entrusted for certain defined purposes and for a certain limited period to representatives of their own choosing, and whenever it is executed contrary to their interests or not agreeable to their wishes, their servants can and undoubtedly will be recalled. And that was written by George Washington in November of 1787.
Well, Rob, I don't want you giving away any secrets, and I eventually want you to tell the folks here where we're going from here, where this recall effort goes. Now that you've got your signatures turned in, you've got them certified, we know that he's going to have to face the music one way or the other. But I'm curious, before we go there, what have you learned out of this process? In other words, what didn't you know going in? What have you observed that surprised you in this process?
I knew politicians lied. I just didn't know how much. I knew the press was biased. I just didn't know how much. I knew that I didn't know. I knew I was a neophyte at running a campaign. I just didn't know how much. let me explain.
Well,
each of those.
I'll tell you, everybody's very thankful that you ran that campaign. You were the perfect guy, and you obviously know about management. You know how to direct people. You know how to delegate, and you did a superior job. And that even went all the way down to handling the press on the day you turned in the signatures. So I just want to give you kudos there and tell you that everybody I've talked to feels that way. So you don't need to apologize. Let's put it that way.
Well, the things I'll start backwards and work my way up. The things I learned about running a campaign is when I first started, as I stated, I'd never done anything like this before. I've never been politically active. So when people started volunteering, I took all comers. Hey, you want to volunteer to do that? Great. You do that. I didn't realize, and now that I've done it, I realize that you have to actually interview some volunteers for some key positions. I got lucky in that the right people ended up in the right positions, but there were some things I ended up having to do on my own that just due to attrition or not having the right things worked together, the right positions weren't there. And so you have to really work that. And so those are some lessons learned from me. Not taking anything away from all of the stuff that people did, because a lot of people stepped up. I could not have been successful without the efforts of others. But some things you just have to interview people for. That was lesson number one. Lesson number two is, the press will sit there and interview you for 10 or 15 minutes, and they'll take a single sentence, and that's the sentence that they want to provide. And I'll give an example of that. On the day we turned the petitions in, first person interviewed me, they wanted to talk about guns, guns, guns. The first thing I told them is, why did you do this? I told them, the number one reason I did this, and this is the truth, is because Morse said he was not going to take my emails, and he was not going to listen to his constituents. The number two reason I did this is because he changed the Senate rules and he disallowed citizen input on important legislation in the state of Colorado. The number three reason I did this is because he pushed gun control, which has cost the state of Colorado hundreds of jobs and millions of dollars in lost revenue and inflicts upon our civil rights. But that's my number three reason. Now, there's lots of folks that help, that have their reasons. Some of them are those. Some of them are others. But what the press heard was guns, and that's where they went with it. That's where they go every time. They have, if you look in multiple press articles, gun rights advocate. That's how they call it. That's what they call us. I believe in the Second Amendment, but this is much, much, much more than that. This is about a representative not representing his constituents, not being accountable to the people he is supposed to be accountable to. I specifically sent an email to him. We are watching what you are doing. You will be held accountable. I'm sure he looked at those and laughed. I don't have to worry about that. Well, he does now. So, and then the third thing, politicians just lying. Between the robocalls and the ads that went out, which were just the lies, and then the lies that have come out about us, it's just blatant. We have posted numerous times on our Facebook page the lies that have come out from Morse as well as his supporters. And we have posted precisely what he has stated and how it is a lie, and the rebuttal to that. And we have asked them, feel free to engage. Prove us wrong. Everything I post and everything the administrators post on Facebook, we try to make sure that that is backed up somewhere with something. Now, there are certain things that we have that we put on there that are opinion, and that's pretty obvious. But things that are factual, back it up. And I'll give you an example. I just got a flyer today from the Morse folks. They're saying outside interests are trying to force an unnecessary recall campaign that would waste more than $200,000 of our tax dollars. A single sentence, two lies. In a single sentence. Yeah, politicians lie. Just a lot more than I thought they did.
May I give you an example of how bad it is and what you're up against and what we're all up against?
Absolutely.
Briefly? Well, say the Pledge of Allegiance with me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the democracy I didn't pledge my loyalty to a democracy. I didn't pledge my loyalty to a democracy. I pledged my loyalty to a republic. But every politician standing up in the country today says it's a democracy. When did it become a democracy? Did you vote for it to become a democracy? I didn't. That's the kind of war we're up against, is most of these people have been suckered into believing something. You go back and read what our forefathers said about democracy. Go back and read what the 1919 U.S. Army Officers Manual said about democracy. It said it's the worst kind of government that could be forced upon a people. We're starting to believe that, are we? We should. We should start
Absolutely.
To believe that.
Absolutely. Well, I just... The amazing thing to me is just how much vitriol can be out there, and the misleading lies that can be out there, and the accusations. One of the things that I'm very... And I was very adamant about when we ran our campaign to get the signatures, and I will be adamant about this until the day Morris is recalled, is that our folks treat others with respect. And we may disagree with you politically, but we're not going to sit there and call you names. We're not going to yell at you. We're not going to cuss at you. As a Christian, I don't believe in doing that. And we had a couple of folks that were not really part of our normal volunteer team that showed up to quote unquote help, and they were sort of instigators. And hey, there's a political thing going on, we can go cause some problems. And they wanted to just go cause problems for the Morse folks. Well, that was causing problems for us, too. And so I went and pretty much read the riot act to them. And the guy wasn't happy with me, but I really didn't care, because that's not how we were going to act, and that's not how we were going to do business. And all of the folks that I worked with and all of the folks that we worked with in our campaign understood that, and the Morse people followed us around from corner to corner to corner. They would see where we were going to be, they would send out scouts to see where we were going to be, and they'd come follow us. That worked out okay for us, because they were looking for a confrontation that we weren't going to give them, and they just added to our numbers. From a distance, you see the Morse sign, and you see the recall Morse sign. It looks like a bunch of people standing on a corner, and people stop and they walk up. Hey, what are you doing? We've got a petition to recall Morse. Are those people over there with you? No, I thought they were. We literally asked people if they knew who those people were, and they thought they were with us.
Where do we go from here, Rob? Where does it go from here? What can happen, and how is the recall campaign going to deal with it, depending on which way it goes?
So we have multiple paths in the road at this point, and contrary to what the political pundits on the left may say, we have thought about them, and we are prepared for them. Right now, we know that we're going to be dealing with some courtroom shenanigans, for lack of a better term. What type of spaghetti can they throw at the wall to see if it'll stick so that Morris doesn't have to face the voters? That's the number one thing they're going to be trying to do. Taking Bloomberg money and D.C. money, and spend it in the courts so they don't have to spend it on advertising in an election. So right now our attorneys are engaged. The BFDF attorneys are engaged. I think there's, and I don't handle this portion. This is part of the logistical stuff the BFDF does, and I'm very, very thankful that they take care of all that stuff. They're handling making sure that we have the right attorneys and we have the right folks working on that kind of stuff. And there's going to be a hearing on the initial protest next Thursday, and I can give the details on that in a minute when I get it found. But once that gets settled, and then they have a chance to protest signatures, and then once that gets settled, then an election can be held. And the opportunity is there is Morris can either resign. Now I've heard different conflicting things. I think it is after, within 5 days after the end of the protest, he can either resign or go to election, one of those two. If he resigns, we win, because we will have gotten rid of Morse, who did not listen to us. We understand that the governor can put in a committee that'll end up sticking another Democrat in there that's very likely going to be anti-gun. That's okay, because we will have gotten rid of Morse, and the exact thing we were going to do in the recall election, we're going to do in 2014. We're not going to forget in a year. If Morris goes to an election and fights it to the bitter end, quote unquote, his words, we're going to win. The only way we won't win is if they bust people in from other locations and cheat. And we're going to have people that we're going to be setting up as poll watchers to help deal with that. So we're getting set up to deal with that issue as well. And we're getting some training on that, and we're going to be training our volunteers on that, and we're going to be prepared to deal with whatever fraud comes our way. Because the other thing that happened in this last session of the Colorado legislature is the what we call the Voter Fraud Act, which was basically let's encourage voter fraud by having same-day voter registration, and all you have to have is a easily copied piece of paper, no photo ID, just a so-called electric bill or some type of piece of paper that anybody can make a copy of. And we fully expect there to be a lot of fraud from that. So we're going to be setting up things to try to address that.
Well, as you know, Rob, I spoke with another state senator. I won't mention his name because he's not here to defend himself. But he saw this as a national referendum on gun control. And they were relying on the fact that they were doing this in an off year, you know, because this didn't happen now. It happened months ago, and they were planning on it all quieting down by the time that the elections came about in another year from now. And so this has upset their apple cart on a national basis because it kept this alive.
Good. I'm glad to have upset the apple cart. We the people are pissed. I'm not alone. I'll say this. I got up off my couch. Lots of other people got up off their couch. We had a couple of volunteers that are what I call the political activist volunteers. They were in the minority by far. One of them told me, as an aside, he goes, I went to your first meeting, and our first meeting had 130 people at it. Our second meeting had 160 people at it. But this is hard work, and so not everybody's going to stick with it. We understand that. It's a lot of work to go out and collect signatures. But that person said, when I went to that meeting and I looked around, it was not all the usual suspects. It was different folks. It was people that I'd not seen before. It was people that I'd not seen in the normal political active groups around town. It was people that are upset about losing their rights. And that is precisely the point we're trying to get across, that we, the people, will fight for our rights. We will stand up. We will do something. And so we
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like a fairly strong libertarian and independent contingent.
Yes. Yes. Very.
Well, the media is always bad to make those people who stand up for their rights look like rebel rousers and troublemakers, when in reality, it's these so-called representatives of the people who simply refuse to do what the people, the majority of the people, are wanting done that are the real problems. They're the ones that's the problem. Government comes from the consent of the governed. And that's from they're trying to make the people who are so upset about how these, like you, about this representative who simply won't do what his job is, represent the people, then, you know, they're trying to make you look like the bad guy, not him.
I am the same kind of rebel rouser as James Madison, John Adams, Benjamin Franklin.
Exactly.
That's the kind of rebel rouser I am.
Well, I support it 100%. I'm saying that's the spin the media gives on it. They want everybody to be afraid to join into movements like what you're talking about.
Absolutely.
And what we're trying to support here, because they want you to look like, oh, you're the bad guy, you're the eccentric, you're the one that everybody needs to be afraid of because you're violent and crazy and you'll ruin our country. When reality is, it's ruined now.
I violently love chocolate. So if violently loving chocolate makes me violent, don't get between me and the Hershey bar. But other than that, I'm fine. And chocolate,
What people need to realize is that all the major problems we face are created and or perpetuated by government. Without government creating, absolutely. Without government coming up with these problems and keeping them at the forefront, there's no problem that we can't solve within our local communities. None. If the government is creating them, then they come in and say, well, okay, we're going to take this liberty or this money from you and solve that problem that they have just created.
Yeah, well, I don't agree with that either. I mean, I agree with what you're saying. I don't agree with the tenet of them doing that.
Well, if you can name a problem that has a major problem that we face today that has not been caused by government, I'd love to hear it.
Well, I can tell you a problem that we have that's not caused by government.
Okay.
And that problem is the people. If we, the people, are complacent and not willing to stand up, then we have a problem.
Well, you could put it that way.
And I'll give you an example. I will give you an example. Walk down the street, and I got a lot of this because I was standing out on the street corner, which I've not done a lot of in my life, but I did for 2 months, standing out on the street corner and watching people go walk through an airport. See how many people are busy playing with their smartphone and not paying attention to the world around them. See how many people are doing other things and not seeing what's going on. That is indicative. When somebody's sitting down there, and I'm kind of nothing against smartphones because they're useful, they serve a purpose. But it's indicative of what's going on in that people are not paying attention to the world around them. By paying attention to what's going on, then the government cannot do what it's doing.
Over 50% of them are on psych drugs, and they have their ability to think chemically removed. Because that's what
you
psych
have to understand.
Drugs
Bobby's in California.
Well, so that works.
Well, I'm from Virginia, and Virginia, when 10 years ago, had the highest incidence of school children on psych drugs of any state in the union. And that was Virginia.
Little boys don't need Ritalin. Little boys need to be able to go play cops and robbers and the cowboys and Indians and army and bikes, and let them go play off their energy. Don't stick them in front of a TV computer.
Right.
Yes.
And that'll take care of that.
I listened to a lecture by a guy by the name of Yuri Bezmenov. And Yuri, it was a KGB agent that defected, and now he's teaching the public, the people here in the States and Canada and places on
the principle.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, yeah. G. Edward Griffin did an interview with him.
He did. That's true.
On YouTube.
But in that lecture on subversion, he was a subversion teacher. He trained people in the art of subversion. And one of the things that he stated about the United States is that you can't subvert an unwilling people. He said if people tried to do in Russia what they do here, they would shoot them. But the people here in the States are a willing target of subversion, and that's why they have been so successful in taking over this country without firing a shot, and they've done it. I mean, we're at the tail end of that process after, 50 to 100 years of them, implementing their program. And if you listen to that lecture, go online, go to YouTube, look up Yuri Bezmenov subversion lecture, and you'll find it. There's a full version of it there. It's about a one-hour lecture, and you will get a very clear education of how this country has been subverted to the point we are. And it is the fault of the people. The reason it's the fault of the people is because they have believed the lies of the tyrants. And a person who believes the lies of the tyrant is equally as dangerous, if not more dangerous, than the liar themselves.
Well, I'll tell you something. Remember earlier I said I learned three things? And one of those three things is the stuff about the media. Even the media that we think is friendly and the media that we think sees it, quote unquote, our way, does not report it the way it is.
In the last hour of this show, we're going to be getting into the people who own that media. There's five or six corporations that own all of the media, including the top newspapers in the country. And these people have a common ancestry and a common religious philosophy, and we're going to get into that. But before we jump ship on the Morse recall, I'd like to and Bobby, I'm glad you jumped in here. I want everybody to be introduced to Bobby Florence. He's been an activist and a freedom fighter for quite a number of years, and we've been kind of pen pal buddies over the years since 2008, and I really got to appreciate your courage, Bobby. But before Rob goes, or before he gets out of here, or we change some topics, I'd really like for you to tell us a little bit, Bobby, about the situation you've been facing recently out there and the letter that you wrote.
Well,
Rob, hang in there with
us. One thing that I've noticed, and you can almost document it, is whenever gun control is strengthened, crime follows, always. Murder rate, gun crime, etc. And I'll tell
Absolutely.
You how real this is. The California legislature realized in this blinding realization that they had never banned the open carry of firearms. So people were doing open carrying excursions around town, whatever. They'd be in groups. They would just wear their sidearm. So they said, oh, my God, how did we miss this? So Schwarzenegger actually vetoed it. But, of course, Governor Moonbeam wouldn't veto such a thing. He signed the legislation banning open carry. The very next day, this guy walked into a beauty salon and slaughtered 7 people, including his estranged wife, of course. It's that quick. It's that fast. So this lady, her name's Michelle Kane. She's married to this lunatic, and she's trying to get away from him. But she's armed with a restraining order. She goes to the cops the day before. This guy's going to kill me. Well, there's nothing we can do. You're going to have to just go away. You're going to have to hide. Well, he found out where she was staying at a friend's house, and when the friend wouldn't let the husband in, he stabbed him, then went and grabbed her and butchered her in the middle of the street. So I wrote this letter to the editor. I write to the local Orange County Register. It's a conservative paper. I get in there a lot. Not so with the L.A. Times. This is what made it into the L.A. Times. And I'm going to read it as they printed it. They edited it, but not too badly. The tragic death of Michelle Kane is a graphic example of what happens when an innocent person brings a piece of paper to a knife fight. Although she was armed with a restraining order, it was apparently no match for the knife allegedly wielded by her husband, who was accused of killing her, even though she pleaded for protection from police shortly before her death. This is what can happen to unarmed citizens. Perhaps if Kane had been armed with a gun, her children would have a mother today. It proves the point that when seconds count, the police are only minutes away. This is a case that I think needs to be made every time someone is killed. I think in every story that's reported, when someone is killed, they should make the point that they were unarmed and make the statement as to what the local concealed carry regulations are. Not in depth, but just some mention of concealed carry is not permitted in L.A. County or whatever. Make that case. I heard some really interesting stuff. Mayor Douchebag with his anti-gun tour. He's got this bus going across country, apparently. They read the names of, let's see, I got the thing here, 4,500 people who have been killed by firearms since Sandy Hook. You know who they mentioned? They mentioned Chris Dorner, who went on a killing spree to kill cops here in L.A. They also mentioned the Boston Bombers. They eulogized the Boston Bombers as being victims of gun violence.
They
this
were.
Is how insane these people are. That's their heroes. That's who they mourn. I think that's insane.
Yes.
And the problem that they're facing is that gun ownership in the nation is at an all-time high. All-time high. And gun crime is way down. Way down. So they have to pick up these little individual anecdotal instances and highlight them. Because that's what the press does. And to what you were saying earlier about how the press lies, you really have to be quoted by the press to really appreciate how devious and deceptive they are.
Oh, yes.
worked on I worked on the campaign for the only conservative running for governor in California in the last election. And they would do an hour long interview and say, "Oh, this is really good stuff. We're on channel Who's He What's It. We're going to show it at this time," and it would get bumped every single time because she was a third party candidate and because she was conservative. So they'll like build you up, make you think like you're going to get some exposure, some play, and then they don't. It's really devious. Really devious. And then this guy, I don't know his name, but he in Santa Monica, he built an AR. He bought an 80% lower and machined it himself, which I find kind of impressive. And then assembled the rest of the gun because they denied him a gun permit. So we're looking at the likelihood that 80% lowers will become illegal in California because whatever a criminal does, the legislature wants to keep honest people from doing. But it is a way to build a gun with no paper trail. And that's apparently what this guy did.
I read about that.
It was, Again, the point you made that all these mass shootings are in gun-free zones, they're also perpetrated by people on psych drugs. 100% of them. 100% of all the mass shootings in this country have been performed by people on psych drugs. You think, and they can't make the connection. I was watching some crime show, and of course they had some bobblehead psychobabble lady, and they were talking about this guy that had committed this atrocity, and he was on psych drugs, but he also smoked marijuana. And her summary was, "You know, I think we really need to realize that marijuana can be a very dangerous drug." Hello? He was on psych drugs. It wasn't a pot. If it wasn't for the pot, he probably would have done it sooner. So there's always
Absolutely.
An excuse. There's always something else. There's always, you know, criminals are devious. And elected politicians are... the ones that aren't criminal are close enough
devious.
To it.
Devious. You make the connection.
They don't, they become a ruling class, and they know it. I mean, especially out here on the left coast.
Well, I know you're in California. We've been Californicated, and we're putting on our condoms and fighting back.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of grim stories from. Colorado. I met a lot of good people from Colorado at the Richard Mack's Constitutional Sheriff Conferences. I'm part of the group that put on the first one and certainly helped him with the second one. And we had county commissioners and sheriffs and all kinds of people from Colorado. And of course, Tom Tancredo, I've met him several times. What a great guy. He came out here and did some fundraising. And it's a state that's going the way of California real quick.
Well,
right before our eyes.
They're trying to make it go that way, but they bit off more than they could chew, and the people of Colorado are not going to allow that to happen. So
we
are fighting back, and this recall is just the beginning of that fight. The recall for Heron is another part of that. The lawsuit with the sheriffs is another part. The 51st State Initiative in Northern Colorado is another part. And so we're going to see some things in 2014.
I saw those guys. I saw those guys. That was really good.
That, well, those things right there tell you a lot, way too much has gone on. A lot of people are pissed off and upset.
As well
when
they
you have
be.
That much political turmoil in a state that you have multiple recall elections, part of a state wanting to secede, and law enforcement officers, 55 out of 62 sheriffs, suing to deal with the illegitimacy of two of the gun control laws, which are so ridiculous, it's crazy.
Yeah,
Gary,
I
cannot stay around. I have got to go. I've got some other things I have to take care of because I've got to take care of them. So,
good reason,
Rob, I've got
work to do.
You stayed on longer than I thought you were gonna. So we're pleased to have had you for this long, Rob.
Well, I've got nothing else.
I hope you get some sleep.
Well,
I get more than 4 hours
sleep
tonight.
I've got to go answer some stuff, so it is what it is. I appreciate your time,
Terry,
as always, and I will be talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you. See ya.
Okay. Bye.
Well, Bobby, you remember John Cook, Sheriff John Cook from Colorado. You obviously remember Terry Makita, who spoke at that first conference.
Yeah,
those two guys are spearheading this lawsuit that they've recruited 55 of the sheriffs out of 62 counties here to sign on to the lawsuit that they're filing against the state for these anti-gun bills that did pass. They're saying they're unconstitutional, unenforceable, and are unnecessary, and that they're an invasion of rights and that they're not going to enforce them. And they are filing suit, but also I'm going to have both of those guys on within the next 30 days. They both said they would come on. We just got to get them booked and scheduled right. But they're going to be on this show here within 30 days, so maybe you'll come back and join us for that.
Yeah, it sounds like a good one. I wonder if Richard Mack could be available too. Do you know Richard?
Oh, yeah, well, he's been on this show twice. Richard's been on here twice with us.
I would think he'd want to sign on with them.
Yeah, well, Bobby, I don't know if you realize it or not, but I was the one that made that thing go viral that got PayPal to release his $47,000 for that first conference.
Oh, excellent. The PayPal thing?
Yes. Yeah, he called me one morning, and one of my buddies was there at a conference with him someplace, and told him that he should talk to me about it, and he called and told me about it, and by 5 o'clock that afternoon, this was at like 9 o'clock in the morning, and by 5 o'clock that afternoon, PayPal released his monies and told him to get it out of there because they had like 100 to 150 calls from people all across the country saying they were going to pull their accounts from them.
Yeah, I remember that.
We had some fun that day. That was kind of cool. I was getting
that
people
was
were sending
cool.
me. They were sending
I
me MP3 recordings of them calling PayPal.
I think what they did, I think that actually boosted our donations. People were so pissed at what was happening. They had donated through PayPal, and they said, "Well, we'll send you a check. We'll send a check to you." So we got it that way too. So I
true.
Think that,
but PayPal was saying, well, because you're not set up as a 501c3, we might get in trouble with the IRS. And that's a bunch of bunk.
Sure. It was an excuse.
Yeah, exactly. But when they started getting phone calls, people threatening to pull their accounts, that was all it took. They were then very happy for Sheriff Mack to take his money and go away.
Yep.
So.
Yep. In fact, from what I recall, they said, "Please take your money."
Yes. Yeah. Get it out of here. Yeah, he called me back. He called me back that evening and says, "What did you do?" I said, "Real simple. I just put the word out to a bunch of people, and they started calling PayPal." So it was funny.
Yep. I did.
So, yep. Dr. J. Edward Weed III, Bobby, you're welcome to hang in here with us. We did have something else we wanted to try to cover tonight in the last 40 minutes here that we've got of the show. And, Ed, you want to jump in? Are you still with us? We didn't lose you, did we?
No, I'm here.
Well, super. You want to launch this or you want me to launch it? When it comes time to read the scripture that we're going to be working from, I'd kind of like to read it from the Hallelujah Scriptures.
Go ahead and read it now. That'll be fine.
It's my belief that that the folks that are creating a lot of the problems, the ones that are actually controlling what many call the shadow government, that these people actually follow, worship, pray to Lucifer, to Satan, assuming he's the same, which I suspect he is, but there are some people that have an opinion that Lucifer and Satan may be separate entities, but I don't see that. And it's our belief that these people have accepted the offer from Lucifer or Satan that he made to Christ, which actually is the Messiah, in Matthew 4. And I'm going to read that scripture as just to set the stage for this discussion. Now, I'm going to read from what's known as the Hallelujah Scriptures. It's the Bible, but it is a translation of the Bible that tries to hold to the original text more than any I've seen. They've tried to wipe out all human agenda in this. They also have held to the Paleo Hebrew script in referring to Yahweh, which is actually God's name. God is not his name. Yahweh is his name. Some people translate that Jehovah, but these folks, being language experts, translate it Yahweh. And they call his son, which the word for son is Bain, which looks like Ben, the name Ben, but it's pronounced Bain, and it means son of Yahweh, is Yahushua. Some say Yeshua. They put it Yahushua. So I'm going to read from this translation. Let me give you a couple of other words here that you're going to hear, just so you'll know what they mean. El is a word for God. Elohim is mighty God. Ruah HaKodesh. Ruah, it means spirit. And it's actually Ruach. It's a CH sound at the end of that, even though there's no C in the word. It's Ruach, Ruach HaKodesh. Ha is the, Kodesh means separate, set apart or holy. The word Yardane is for Jordan, reference to the Jordan River. Yochanan is for John, in this case is reference to John the Baptist. Shamayim is a word for heavens, what we know as heavens. Mikdash is a set-apart place or a sanctuary, like a temple. Now I'm going to read. I'm going to start a little bit before Matthew 4, where Yahushua comes to John the Baptist and is baptized. And the name of Matthew in this particular scripture is Matithyahu. So let's start. Then Yahushua came from Galilee, to Yochanan at the Yardane to be immersed by him. But Yochanan was hindering him, saying, "I need to be immersed by you, and you come to me?" But Yahushua, answering, said to him, "Permit it now, for thus it is fitting for us to fill all righteousness." then he permitted him. And having been immersed, Yahushua went up immediately from the water, and see, the shamayim were opened, and he saw the Ruah of Yahweh descending like a dove and coming upon him. And see, a voice out of the shamayim saying, "This is my bane, the beloved, in whom I delight." Then Yahushua was led up by the Ruah into the wilderness to be tried by the devil. And after having fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. And the trier came and said to him, "If you are the bane of Yahweh, command that these stones become bread." But he answering, saying, "It has been written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of Yahweh." Then the devil took him up into the Kadesh city, meaning the holy city, put him on the edge of the Mikdash, and said to him, "If you are the bane of Yahweh, throw yourself down, for it has been written, he shall command his messengers," messengers is angels, "command his messengers concerning you, and in their hands they shall bear you up, and that you do not dash your foot against a stone." Yahushua said to him, "It has also been written, you shall not try Yahweh your Elohim." Again, the devil took him up on a very high mountain and showed him all the reigns of the world, meaning the kingdoms of the world, and their esteem, and said to him, "All these I shall give to you if you fall down and worship me." Then Yahushua said to him, "Go, Satan, for it has been written, you shall worship Yahweh your Elohim, and him alone you shall serve." Then the devil left him, and he and see, messengers came and attended him. And Yahushua, having heard that Yochanan had been put in prison, withdrew into Galilee, or Galilee. Ed, you want to take it from there?
Sure. Well, I'd like to draw a correlation with the temptation of Christ, with what Satan does to work with his with Yahweh's people, Israel. And the thing that we have to understand is, in the Sermon on the Mount, Yahweh in the flesh body, Yahshua the Christ, taught his Israelite apostles, all except Judas excluded. He said, "Ye are the light of the world." And by this declaration, he confirmed his relationship, his special relationship with his people, Israel. And it not only talks about, he not only talks about the dimension and the spirit of light, he talks about the functions of light, even in the areas of knowledge. So in this instance, when Christ uses the word world, "ye are the light of the world," the Greek word there is cosmos, and that means the defining order of things. Therefore, ye are the light of all arrangement. Ye are the light of all human order, or the order of the tribes and the nations. That's what Christ was telling his people. And when Satan was trying to tempt Christ, he took him up on the mountain and showed him the entire kingdom structure of the world. And Satan's full goal is to entice the people of Yahweh God, the true Israelites, the white Western European peoples and nations, and take them and suck them into the kingdoms of this world. He wants them to be a part of the kingdoms of this world. He wants that to be the primary emphasis that they have in the world today, to be sucked into this process. And his children, and the scripture says that they're his children in John chapter 8, verse 44, right out of the mouth of Yahushua the Christ, they are of their father, the devil. And just like Satan, the Jews dangle sin in front of the eyes of God's people constantly, tempting and enticing them to be involved in a part of the kingdoms of this world and not being a part of the kingdom that Yahweh will one day bring to this earth. And that's the goal that Satan has had from the very beginning, is to deceive and to mislead. And it is written that man shall serve only the Most High. That's what Christ spoke to him. He said, it is written that you should serve Yahweh only. And the Most High God should be served. So under this declaration of order of the cosmos, he was telling us that we are the light of the world, and you are the light of the order of the cosmos, or the order of the world. And this light is a special concept of a spiritual combination, which has its relationship with all which God created. In the book of John, it says that Yeshua made all things that were made. All things that were made were made by the Word, and the Word, without anything, in other words, without anything, was not made. Nothing was made without him, apart from him. He is life, and in him is life, and the light is the light of men, and the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehends it not. And that's where we are today. We've got a whole manner of people out there that are not comprehending the darkness, the spiritual darkness. We're in the shape we're in today because Satan has used his offspring, who founded communism, who founded modern psychiatry, who founded the banking system, who founded Hollywood and runs it today. And you don't have to take my word for it. You go and research it yourself, and you'll see that the Jews are the bankers, and the Jews own the publication houses, and they own the newspapers. They control most of the news media on the television, the news channels. They are the ones that run the banks and control and order the banks, and they're the ones that set up communism in Russia. And there's tons of documentation of those things. And I'm not going to do everybody's homework for them. I mean, people need to learn to research and do some studies themselves. I've got books available that document a lot of those things to anybody who would want them. But people need to do some of their own homework and their own research. And they need to understand that these things were taking place and that darkness has been pushed upon our people to the point that was the goal. You know, when he was talking earlier tonight about Virginia, Virginia was one of the strongest states in the United States for such a long period of time. President Washington was from Virginia, Thomas Jefferson. Some of our greatest leaders came out of that great state that is now so corrupt and so infested with crime and drugs and so many different things there that it becomes such a serious problem. And the whole point has been an attack on the locations and the peoples that were the most moral, the most decent, the most involved in doing what the kingdom of God purpose was and is in the world today. That's the attack that Satan has had. It may seem like a political attack at times. It may seem like an economic problem at times, and it is. But ultimately, there's a spiritual force behind it, and it's a spiritual force to keep the kingdom of God and the glories of that kingdom from being implemented by God's people upon this earth. And that's what his will. Ultimately, he will bring the kingdom of heaven to this earth, of course. Of course he will. But we are supposed to submit to that kingdom, and we're supposed to bring forth the light of that kingdom, and we're supposed to set in motion the orders of that kingdom and represent that light. And he says if we put that light under a basket, then we have done no good. We have done no good. We have failed to represent him and the kingdom that he's brought to this earth. And he also uses another analogy, Mr. Dodd, if the salt loses its flavor. Now, people don't like salt very much. When you get salty and you stand up and you speak the truth, as we've spoken many times on this show, in person, to other people, the things we stand up for, when you start getting salty and you start rubbing salt in those open wounds, people get angry and they get frustrated and they don't like what's being done. But when the salt loses its flavor, or savor, or its ability to season, then the world becomes a corrupt, evil, wicked, tasteless, sin-filled place. When God's people, who he called and set apart according to his own will, do not do the things that they're called to do, we usher in these problems and all of these things, and we let darkness reign in the place of what Yahweh said was supposed to be the ruling of the light. And of course, Satan, you know, don't marvel that Satan manifests himself as an angel of light. And he's got these false prophets He's got politicians that lie, but he don't just have politicians that lie. He don't have just lying politicians set up. He's got false prophets set up. He's got ministers who move into the churches, and they teach lies. And when the and all these different things, false ministers, false teachers, false politicians, that are not standing for the things that are right, holy, or biblical. And nothing that has to do with the kingdom of God and Christianity. And Satan is always pushing God's people because he wants dominion. Yahweh's perfect will was that we, the Israelite people, the white Western Europeans, have dominion. That's what he said to Adam in the garden. I think that's one of the things that Satan had such a big problem with Adam and Eve, rather, is that he wanted dominion. He wants dominion over this earth. He works every day to have dominion, as do the children of Satan, the Jews. They're constantly working to have dominion. They're constantly working to try to get wealth, not earn it lawfully and rightfully, but to get it, to put themselves in a position to get it. And that's what that's the whole point here. But we've got a problem in our society today because people won't accept the deity of Christ. They don't want to believe that Yeshua the Christ was Yahweh God in the flesh body. They don't want to accept the outdated philosophies of the Old Testament. Okay? And they don't want to, they may want to accept Christ as a great teacher, as a good man, you know. But they don't want to accept the whole truth of the Word. And it says in this very chapter that man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word of God, meaning the Old and the New Covenants, the Old and the New Testaments, both still apply in today's world on today's time schedule. And with all these teachings that we have, these lies that have been accepted and these truths that have been rejected, we suddenly, you know, have an integrated society where there is really apparently no truth, nothing is sacred. What is truth is everything is questioned in the school systems as truth. Well, how do we know it's truth? That's always the question that's asked. The youth of today are asked those questions. And if you're a child of light, and you're functioning in the light, and you're walking in the light, and you're seeing the light, then you're going to denounce all the policies of paganism, and you're going to denounce everything that those policies stand for. And you're going to denounce the kingdoms of this world and focus on the kingdom that our Father Yahweh will one day bring to this world and rule over forevermore. But the era out of the pulpits has influenced our nations for the worse. And we permitted the entrance into our nation and the moving into positions of influence of the sons and daughters of Lucifer over millions of our people and over millions of our youth. When our nation was governed by the true church, we were in much better shape than we are today. We formulated the Constitution around the laws of God. So now again, I draw your attention back to the fact that Christ said, ye are the light of the world. If you do not put forward this light in the world, in the cosmos, in the order of things, then there will be no order anywhere inside this government. There will be no order in anything going on in the streets. There will be no order in our society of any kind because it comes from God. It comes from knowing Yahweh personally. We've taken away from today's youth, I think, the great principles of saying there is no other God. In the school systems, they won't say that. In the streets, they won't say that. But it's the truth. And it's when we should demand, we must demand that that be understood. There is no other God apart from Yahweh, God of the Bible. Period. They're all lies. They're not the true and living God. Their gods may be on display somewhere for them to go see because they're dead, but those are gods with a little g. Their God is not alive, and their God is not real. And Scripture tells me that besides me besides Yahweh, there is no other God. He said, I alone am the light. I am alone and the father of light. I alone am creator. And because we are the children of light, that his light fills our consciousness. And out of that plane of our spirit must come forth wisdom to this world. Wisdom on how to handle every issue that we've discussed tonight and then some. We have to. We are literally little manifestations of Yahweh Yeshua's greater light. We are literally made in the true and living God's image. And Luke chapter 3 says, Adam was a son of Yahweh God. And Adam was put here to take dominion away from Satan and his offspring. We're not exercising our dominion. We're not teaching the truth of the word. We're letting Satan come in and offer us the kingdoms of the world. And we're letting him offer us economic advantages. And we're letting him put our people, in many instances, on the movie screen. And we're letting his children put us in positions of political power, et cetera, et cetera. But the focus is not for us to focus on the kingdom of God. We're focusing on the kingdoms of Satan, which Satan was offering to Jesus Christ in Matthew chapter 4 and Luke chapter 4 and Mark chapter 1. And when Yeshua Christ, when Yahweh in the flesh body was faced with this situation, and it was brought straight to him immediately there, he said, get behind me, Satan. Get out of my way, Satan, for it is written. You see, that's where we fail, I think, Mr. Dodd, and I hope our listeners understand that. That's where we fail miserably in our society today. Is it written? Is it written in the word of the living God? When you see Yeshua constantly dealing with the problems that is faced in this country, in his life, he's shown us what to do with the problems in this country. He encountered every problem, every lie that he came across, he encountered it with and encountered it with the truth. He stood up to it and countered it off with truth. He spoke the truth. And he quoted the word of the living God. He quoted the words that are written in the book that you just read, in this Bible, in the parchments. He quoted those things, and he said, it is written. I want our listeners to understand that there is truth in this world. There is truth. And it is not just a thing. It is the God, man, Yahweh in the flesh. We're told in the book of John that he is the truth. The truth is the true and living God. It's not just a thing that we're searching for and can't find. It's the only true and living God, man, Yahweh in the flesh, born of the Virgin Mary. And we need to let our people know these things. They need to understand that truth is not relative to the situation that you lived in or grew up under, that there is absolute truth. Now, if our gospel be hid, it is hid to those who are lost. Corinthians tells us that. And if a person does not know where he is, then he is lost. And his relationship with his creator, with his father Yahweh, is not where it needs to be. And it even tells us in 2 Corinthians 4 that the God of this world has blinded the minds of them who believe not. Satan is working constantly with his lies to blind our people, just like we were talking about earlier tonight. When we talk about what the lies we face, what lies we are up against in this society we live in today, our people are not even aware of so much of the things. I mean, every politician in this country, every president over the last 50 or 60 years has used the term democracy. Again, just like we said when we read the Pledge of Allegiance, I didn't pledge allegiance to a democracy. You didn't pledge allegiance to a democracy. We didn't vote to change this republic to a democracy. Yeah, we woke up, and all of a sudden, every one of our so-called representatives of the people tell us we live under a democracy. I don't think people really understand the full scope of just how masterful Satan is with his lies and how his offspring is with his lies, how clever they are, how subtle they are, just how deceitful they are at putting forth their propaganda, their message that is meant to blind and destroy. And the Apostle Paul, led by the Spirit of Yahweh, teaches us that, he said, we do not preach ourselves. We only preach Yeshua the Christ. We preach that he is Yahweh in the flesh, and that he commanded the light to shine into the darkness. Now, here's what happens when we shine the light. Here's what happens when we're salty. Like I said, salt, and this is an analogy that Yeshua Christ used with his apostles, because they had taken salt from the Dead Sea, and this secular history tells us during those days that they had taken salt from the Dead Sea and tried to use it to preserve meat with, and they had found that it was absolutely worthless. So, and rather than using it to preserve meat, which it was no good for, it was worthless, it had lost its savor and its ability to do anything to preserve the meat, they took the salt off the sea that they had tried to use there and scattered it over the roads so that it would help keep down the dust, because it was no good for the purpose it was actually being used for. And that's what he's saying to us. The salt is no good if it's not salty. Yes, when you shine light into a dark world that is blind, that light hurts people's eyes. Oh, they put their hands up. Oh, the light. Oh, man. Cut that light off. You ever been awake in the morning and somebody flipped the light on? Oh, cut that light off. People don't want that light shown to them, brought to their eyes, because it hurts. It's a hard thing to come to grips with. But that's what we are called to do by the word of the living God. And as this light comes from us, it illuminates the darkness, revolts against it. They're lost as they are, you know, as they can be. And they're looking, and they're trying to promote the Luciferian kingdom of darkness. And they're doing it constantly. But that doesn't matter what they're trying to promote. What matters is what we promote. It matters that we say, get behind me, Satan, as Christ did in this particular passage. It is written that we are to be the light of the world. We are to be the salt. We're not to tickle the ears of our congregations. We're not to tickle the ears of our listeners. We're to tell them the truth. And you know why, people? We've been talking about it all night long. Haven't we, Mr. Dottie? We've been talking about freedom, have we not? Preserving our freedom. Is this correct?
Absolutely.
Freedom. We've been looking for freedom all night. We've been discussing freedom and how we might preserve freedom. Well, the scripture tells us that the truth shall set us free. The truth shall set us free. So if we don't go forth proclaiming and teaching the truth of his word, we have no hope of being free. Now, I understand that people don't like that, and I understand that it's offensive to many in today's society. And when you teach against abortion, and the scripture plainly says that woe be unto the hands that shed innocent blood, my wife is due to give us our third child, praise Yahweh, in July. And since 5 weeks into this child's conception, since the fifth week after it was conceived, we have been able to see its heart fluttering and beating. Its little heart was beating 5 weeks into conception. When abortion takes place, it's murder. It's hands shedding innocent blood. And you've got people whining and crying about all the injustice in the world and all these people that are slaughtered with guns and the 6 million Jews that were supposedly killed over in World War II by a half-Jew named Hitler. Go back and look at his own genealogies. Hitler always covered up his genealogies. He did everything he could to hide his genealogies from the world because he didn't want them to know that he was part Jewish, that he was financed by the same Jewish bankers who financed the Russian Revolution. But they don't whine and cry at all about the 50 million American children who have been systematically murdered and slaughtered and thrown into the dumpsters behind abortion clinics, still moving, no less. They don't say a word about that Holocaust that exists each and every day with a supposed right for a person to choose. You see, we've got to bring light into a world that doesn't understand anything about holiness, anything about righteousness. And they're not going to like what we have to say about abortion, about race fixing, about homosexuality. They're not going to like it. But it doesn't matter what they like. What matters is it the truth.
Or about genocide, or about genocide in general, or about
exactly.
killing off our labor force.
Exactly.
Cutting the reproductive rate to a level that our society can no longer sustain itself.
Exactly. What does the scripture teach about those things, Mr. Don? He said for you to be fruitful and to multiply, to have children. How can you have children when you have a society full of men getting vasectomies and a society full of women getting abortions? How can you produce children?
See, Ed, my point on this is that people have trouble understanding why they're spraying the stuff in the sky. They have trouble understanding why they're putting this stuff in our food. They have trouble understanding why they're trying to do away with heirloom seeds. They have trouble understanding what they're putting in the water because they say, "What? That doesn't make any sense. Why would they want to kill people? Why would they do this? Because if they want to enslave us, they're cutting the number of slaves." But the people don't understand that these people are following Satan, and he wants to reclaim God's creation. He wants to put us all back into the dust of the earth. He wants only those people remaining that he can control to force them to worship him. So he deceives them into believing that they can be gods themselves because that's what his dream is. That's what his fantasy is. So he's got these people convinced that he's going to make them all gods if they follow him. And so they believe that they don't have any conscience. They've sold their souls to this guy, to this being, but just in the same way that Yahushua refused to sell his soul to him in the wilderness. And these people have accepted that. They've said, "Yes, we'll bow down and worship you because you're going to make us all gods." Look at the false cultish religions out there. They all believe they're going to become gods. And they fall down and worship this counterfeit false god. And everything that they do, their money's counterfeit, the government corporate entity they set up is counterfeit. The whole thing is counterfeit. It's all false. It's all a lie. And they have bought into that lie, and they're expecting us to buy into this lie, and the people are so dumbed down that they can't recognize that these people have no conscience. They have no reservation about killing off 85-90% of the people. They have no reservation about doing things that's going to destroy the earth in its entirety. And that's exactly what Yahweh has said in his prophecy, that if he didn't end the day short, there would be no flesh left. And
exactly.
It's because of what these people are doing. I mean, it's laid out for us in the scriptures. And, you know, I'm just, the more I study it, the more, you know, I recognize that we talk about the politician telling lies and the media lying. Well, it's all a lie. They're a part of a of a system of deception.
Sure. Completely. Well, and a lot of times, and let me explain something, because a lot of people think that we're just, you know, when you say things like that you believe in, that you don't believe in mixing races or things like that. Some people understand abortion. Some people understand homosexual things that you stand against. When I stand up for that, people accuse me of being racist. But let me explain my position. I believe in preserving creation as Yahweh himself made it. Now, that doesn't just mean that I believe in preserving our race as Yahweh made it. It means I believe in preserving the black race as Yahweh made them, the Asian race as Yahweh made them. Because when we start to mix, then we are no longer God's creation. It's just like a mule. A mule is a horse and a donkey mixed together, forcibly mixed together by man to make a mule. Two mules cannot produce another mule because it's not God's creation. It's not what God intended. It was not his divine purpose. I'm trying to preserve what God created, and he said in the first chapter of Genesis alone that he created things to produce and reproduce kind after kind.
Ed, so we've got about 4 minutes left. We've got about four minutes left, and I'd like to come at this from a different direction. I'd like to say what you're saying, but I'd like to come at it from a different direction real quick. These people who are all of the Ashkenazi bloodline, they are Germanic people. They are not of Judah. They are not of Judeos. They are not the people of scriptural Israel. They have, again, counterfeited that position in order to achieve a national image. They lost their country that was known as Khazaria. They've been driven out of 30 different countries in the world, at least. And they were, back in the 8th century when they converted, when they were proselytes to Talmudic Kabbalist Judaism, which is from Babylon, it is Satan worship. They pray to Lucifer, it's right in there. When they converted to this Talmudic Judaism, they were a mongrelized group of people who were in a quandary because they were pagan idol worshippers, and they couldn't convert to Christianity because the whites wouldn't accept them. They couldn't convert to Islam because the purebred Arabs wouldn't accept them. They lost their country, and they became a group of people without a nation. So it became in their goal. Their goal was to mongrelize the world. Just in the same way that they want to, they use their race baiters. They are the race baiters. They're the ones that created Zionism. The World Zionist Congress in 1897 was formed by Herzl, who was an agent of Rothschild. So their goal was to do away with all pure races, and it was to get rid of all national borders so that they could rule the world without any sovereign nations out there. That's their goal.
And so that people don't just think we're so that people don't just think we're motivated by racist attitudes. Let me read real quick before we get off the air the Jewish Almanac, copyright 1980, page 1, because I want people to understand that the Jews themselves say and teach that they are not the Israelites of the Bible. That's not just what you're saying, Mr. Dodd, or what I'm saying. This is out of the Jewish Almanac, copyright 1980, page 1. And I quote, "Strictly speaking, it is incorrect to call an ancient Israelite a Jew or to call a contemporary or modern-day Jew an Israelite or Hebrew," end quote. This is straight from the Jews themselves. They don't even claim to be, in their own writings, of the tribes of Israel, the true Israel that is found in the scriptures. This is not just something, like I said, that I'm saying because I hate them, or you're saying because you hate them. This is what they say and teach themselves. And we can't let people forget that, where the source is coming from. Otherwise, they'll just declare us to be some racist haters who are crazy and just some neo-Nazi or something somewhere. And we are not, certainly not. It's coming straight out of the mouths of the Jews themselves. And if anything we need to get across is that the Israelites of the Bible and the modern-day Jews are not the same people. And I think you put that eloquently tonight. And I just wanted to support that with something that the Jews themselves have put forward.
The Lord,
Bobby, thanks for hanging in with us. Great little sermon you gave there. That was good.
Oh, thanks. Glad I could help out.
See you next week.
I'll see what
I can
do.
See you next week on Walls in Our Minds. Thank you, Dr. Kate.
Thank you for having me.
Great show, Mary. Thanks.
Nice. What if his people prayed? And those who bear his name would only seek his face, yeah, and turn from their wrong way. And what would happen if we prayed for those raised up to lead the way? Then maybe kids in school could pray, and unborn children see light of day. What is the light that we pursue? Came from a hunger for the truth. What if the family turned to Jesus? Stopped asking Oprah what to do? What if his